God's mercy. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. The first thing that I began when I started this study was try to understand the first thing that the Lord kept dealing with me about is try to understand the relationship or the difference between mercy and grace. And I'm not going to get into grace. I'm going to try to deal with mercy. So the Lord is dealing with me, and I can't get down to my lesson till I keep trying to understand the difference between grace and mercy. So then I began to try to understand about mercy. And here's what came to my mind as I thought about mercy. And listen to this definition, and I'll tell you where it came from later. It said that benevolence, mildness, or tenderness of heart, which disposes a person to overlook injuries or to treat an offender better than he deserves. The disposition that tempers justice and induces an injured person to forgive trespasses and injuries and to forbear punishment, or inflict less than law or justice will warrant. Now, you see, that's what I believed that mercy meant. Well, then this is in my mind, and so the Lord takes me down a road, and I'm going to share that road with you. So I deal a long time trying to understand mercy and its relationship to grace, and how, basically I'm an engineer and I like things to go 1, 2, 3, and 2 plus 2 is equal 4. And also I believe that God's wisdom and all of his doctrines all come down to very simple things, not hard to understand. And I believe that because, you see, as a 7-year-old boy, see, I understood about what I needed to do to be saved. And God wants us to understand, and he didn't mean to make anything hard, because he loves us and wants us to understand everything. So I was dealing with this question of grace and mercy, and as I was doing this, one of the things that I noticed is that if you went a little bit further in this, this definition said, but exercised only toward offenders. Well, then I begin to worry a little bit about that. Is mercy only for guilty people, or is mercy for innocent people? So I'm dealing with that question. And I try to deal with that for a while. And then I did something else really early in this study. And, sometimes we do things and it just passes us by. I looked at the definition of mercy in Young's. Young's and Strong's, I use both of them, and I'll talk about both of them. But as I looked at Young's, Young's was very straightforward. Here's what it says mercy is: kindness or loving kindness. That's all it is. That's what it says: kindness or loving kindness. And I see that. So I keep going and I'm trying to understand understand if it only applies to guilty or if it applies to innocent. So I went a little bit further. And then... early one morning, something came and said, it didn't say anything about forgiveness. So then I go back and I begin to look at these definitions and listen to this definition again. I'm going to read these, every one of them that's in Young's. There's 5 of them, but they're very short. Kindness or loving kindness. That's the most often used form in the Old Testament. It also has to love or pity and bowels a time or two. In the New Testament, it says kindness or beneficent. That means active goodness, kindness, love, pitiful, merciful, compassion. So I look at that, and then in the Youngs and Strongs, and I'm not going to read all the Strongs, but Strongs basically says the same thing. It just takes more words to say the same thing. So now I'm at a place, and I've got a definition in my mind, and I'll be honest with you, I'm still having trouble getting this definition out of my mind because I've had it for a lot of years. And that definition is what we use in our court systems that says you want to have mercy. In other words, you give deferred or less punishment than deserved. You see, that's what's in my mind, and that's what I'm thinking about. But then when I go back to Young's, it says kindness or loving kindness. And then all of these things, and I go through all of Strong's, and basically it says loving kindness. Now, it says that, and I want to talk about some things that it does not say. It does not say anything about whether the person is innocent or guilty. It's just loving kindness. Now, you see, my mind is still over here as it has to do with guilt and all the things that my court system does today. But I keep going back to the scriptures and the words that were original and the translation, both Young's, loving kindness, and Strong's, almost exactly the same, and neither of them said anything about guilt or innocence. And the most important part is neither of them included forgiveness. Now, forgiveness, I want to talk about forgiveness just a second. Forgiveness has to do with not punishing the way we deserve. In other words, that has to do with the court system of today of giving less punishment than is deserved. In other words, either putting it off, delaying it, or reducing the punishment. And I want to go back to this again, and I keep coming back to it because my mind is one place, and I read Strong's and Young's, and over again, mercy simply means loving kindness. It does not address whether the person is guilty or innocent. It does not have anything. There's no indication in any of the original words that includes forgiveness. Now, I was surprised, just to be honest with you, and my mind still has a little problem with that. But if I go back to those words that both Young's and Strong's used, now, this is important. Young's and Strong's. Young's, I think, was 1910, Strong's 1890. In other words, around 1900. And what they did is they took the original words and tried to translate it into the words in the common American English. In other words, what was of that date. Now, so you see, I have a great conflict here in what I've always believed, what I've always thought, and when I hear the word mercy, I think about for some forgiveness in there. But if you go back to the original word, and I'm going to say this again, it only includes kindness or loving kindness. Does not mention guilt or innocent. Does not mention forgiveness, which is unusual, I would say. Now then, how is it that the word that we so much use today and think about mercy, and you go ask the court to have mercy on you. In other words, don't punish me the way I deserve. How is it that that word that we use and is so ingrained in our mind, how is it that the original word that was that is both in Young's and in Strong's that doesn't mention that? How did that come about? Now then, let's talk about this a little bit, because I want to do one more thing, and I've got all of these. I copied them out, and they're in here. You can look at the definitions out of Young's and Strong's, and you can look for yourself. And it just talks about love, unfailing love, devotion, kindness. There is one thing in Strong's that if you'll be careful, you'll see something, and it says, especially a covenant relationship, and he refers to something, and we'll get back to that in a few minutes. But it's just to be gracious, to have mercy. You see, that goes back to, like Brother Mitch said, when you define the word with the same word, it doesn't help you very much. But let's go back to the original word now. I keep saying this. Original word of mercy means loving kindness. Now, how is it that this word mercy is so ingrained in my mind to think about forgiveness, and when the original word included neither guilt or innocent nor forgiveness? Let's see if we can understand it a little bit more. When you got to the New Testament, there's a lot of people that look at the New Testament words and they become a little bit vague. Still, we're not talking about forgiveness, and we're not talking about guilt or innocent in the translation by Young's and Strong's and then by some other people. But you'll find that in the New Testament, the word mercy sometimes is not exactly as clear. And the reason I say that, some of them talk about how that the common Greek word compared to the pure Greek word, in other words, the everyday compared to the language, a little bit different. And then some of them say, well, we can't exactly get there. Well, I found out the reason they say we can't exactly get there. Now, how is it that when you go to your dictionary, now, I'm going to tell you where this came from that I read earlier. That was Webster's 1828 dictionary. Webster's 1828 dictionary. If you ask me, what should you use for a definition if you're not going to go to Young's or Strong's or Thayer's or something else, I would recommend to you Webster's 1828 dictionary. Now, why would I do that? How many of you have read Webster's Experience of Salvation? All right. If you haven't, my brothers and I have a website called mysalvationexperience.com. You can read Webster's Experience of Salvation on that website. If you forget that, I've got some cards that I'll give you, or if you want somebody else, and that website is nothing but people's experience of salvation. Nothing else, just people's experience of salvation. But Webster has the most wonderful experience. Somebody the other day told me about buying Webster's 1828 dictionary, and he said, and I don't have that, I just use the online one, but he said, that description of his say of being saved was worth the price of that whole book. But that experience was in a letter that he wrote to, I think his name was Thomas Dawes, in 1808. And he told his experience. It is wonderful. Now, that's the reason that I would recommend to you Webster's 1828 dictionary. And you don't have to buy it. You can simply go online and Webster's 1828, and you can just look up any word you want, and he gives it. Now, about a third of the definitions also include a Bible verse. And the reason is that, see, he was saved in 1808. He was saved in 1808, and in 1828, he was strong in his doctrines, and he was such a wonderful change in his life that he used those scriptures. And I would recommend that to you. However, then how is it that in 1828, Webster says This is mercy, and I'm going to read it to you again. That benevolence, mildness, or tendency, and I'm not going to read you all the others, to forbear punishment, but exercised only towards offenders. How is it that Webster's is so far different from what Young's and Strong's did? Webster's was early 1800s. Strong's and Young's were 1900s, early turn of the century there. Now, how is it they're so different? To be honest with you, I never ran into that before. And in almost every case that people have talked about something, they used the definition, and the definition that you get from Webster's pretty much agrees with the current language. But there is something much different from the description of mercy that Young's and Strong's says it is simply loving kindness. It doesn't include guilt or innocence. It does not include forgiveness. It's just loving kindness. And they just stop right there, loving kindness. It doesn't get into anything else. In other words, mercy, according to Young's, is God's loving kindness. Now, how is it that there is so much difference between what Webster says and what Young says? Young's was 100 years later from Webster's, and Webster's is a born-again child of God, and I believe the things that he writes, and I have recommended that to everybody. And how is it this possible that that's so much difference? Well, now let's go to Webster's dictionary. You see, he started, and his first one was 1806. He had another one. He had some more definitions in 1810. 1806 had 10,000 words. 1828 had 30,000 words. So let's go and look at a little bit of what he did. And it so happens that you can get the 1806 definition also. The 1806 definition in Webster's, listen to this, mercy is pity, compassion, tenderness, and then he just says discretion. He doesn't say anything else. So he just used discretion. He didn't expound on that. He just stopped there. Well, if you look at what happened next, I'm going to give you the 1810 definition that Webster gave. 1810, it says, disposition to overlook injuries or to treat an offender better than he deserves, an act or exercise of mercy or favor, clemency, pity, compassion, leniency, and mildness. So you see that he's gone from pretty much compassion and tenderness and discretion. In other words, he's pretty close to the same thing that Young says, just loving kindness. But in 1810, he's moved a little bit further, and it says an exercise of mercy or favor, clemency, and to treat an offender better than he deserves. Still, he's not talking too much different from what it said in Young's, loving kindness. But now let's go to 1828. 1828, that benevolence, mildness, or tenderness of heart which disposes a person to overlook injuries or treat an offender better than he deserves, that's okay. That goes along with loving kindness. But it goes on, the disposition that tempers justice and induces an injured person to forgive trespasses and injuries. In other words, forgiveness. Now, he's included forgiveness in his definition of mercy. And to forbear punishment. In other words, he forgives. In other words, mercy includes forgiveness. Young's and Strong's do not include forgiveness. Now, he also said, but exercise only toward offenders. Now, listen to the verse that he used, Webster used in 1828. He said, the Lord is long-suffering and of great mercy, forget, this is Numbers 14 and 18, forgiving iniquity and transgressions and by no means clearing the guilty. Now, if we understand that Young's and Strong's are more likely to be correct than Webster's, then mercy does not include guilt, innocence, or forgiveness. It is simply God's loving kindness. Now, how did it change so much? I've also given you your online definition, which would be up to date, and it's not as far in the forgiveness as Noah Webster was. Now, do not misunderstand. I'm going to say something here that will put it will tell you something about Noah Webster, and it does not change my belief in how good his dictionary is. A whole lot better than anything you'd find today, okay? Two reasons. Number one, he was a born-again child of God. Number two is the words were closer to the 1600s than the words are today. But now how did Webster get this so much different 100 years before Young's and Strong's says it's loving kindness? Two reasons. Number one, Webster's purpose was to take the word of the day and tell you what it means in the common American English. So Webster's was not trying to prepare a doctrinal interpretation of the Bible. But you see, what we've done is we've used Webster's definition of mercy for 200 years, and then that gets ingrained in our mind. Now, how is this? Now, I want to talk good about Noah Webster a minute. Consider the following statement that he made. Noah Webster, author of the first American speller and the first dictionary, said, "The Christian religion in its purity is a basis, or rather the source, of all genuine freedom in government. And I am persuaded that no civil government of a republican form can exist and be durable in which the principles of that religion have not, a controlling influence." So you see, he believed in God, he was born again, and he believed our country should do this. Now, how is it that his definition is so much different? Well, if you have read his complete letter to Thomas Doss, I want to read an excerpt from it. He said, "My wife, however, was friendly to these meetings." He's talking about the awakening. "Was friendly to those meetings, and she joined by my two eldest daughters, who were among the first subjects of serious impressions. I did not forbid, but rather discourage their attendances on conferences, finding their feelings rather wounded by this opposition, and believing that I could not conscientiously unite with them in a profession of the Calvinistic faith." In other words, he didn't believe that he could go to this church that they went to, where that was a Calvinistic church. He said, I just couldn't do that. However, he goes on and tells his experience. And in the end, here's what he said. Near the end, this is what he said. He said, "In the month of April last, I made a profession of faith. In the most solemn and effective of all transactions of my life, I was accomplished with my two eldest daughters. Jay, while I felt a degree of compunction that I had not sooner dedicated myself to God, it was with heartfelt delight I could present myself before Maker and say, 'Here am I, with the children which thou hast given me.'" In other words, he joined that Calvinistic church. Okay, now then we understand that he's in a Calvinistic church. Listen, and I'm not going to go back over it, but if you read the three definitions in 1806, he's pretty close to the same thing that Young's and Strong's were. Pretty close. go to 18:10, and he's beginning to get away from it, and he includes forgiveness and mercy. And then you go to 18:28, and he's into that then. Mercy includes forgiveness, and it's only forgive, and it's only for the guilty. Now, just in case that you doubt that he was Calvinistic, here's the 18:28 definition of elect. In theology, chosen as the object of mercy, chosen, selected, or designated to eternal life, predestined in the divine counsels. He was a Calvinist. And we understand. A lot of the people that did a lot of the writing were Calvinistic. They were Calvins. I want to go now to something else. I need to move along, and I got all these, I got this in detail, more than you probably want to see. So I'm going to go forward, and I'm going to just use mercy as loving kindness. Doesn't include guilt or innocent, doesn't include forgiveness. It's just God's loving kindness. Now, you pray about this and you read this. I am a long ways from where I thought I was going to be at this time. But this is where I am. I want to read something else to you. Mercy is an attribute of God. J.M. Pendleton in Christian Doctrine summarized the moral attributes of God as goodness, justice, truth, wisdom, and holiness. Pendleton states that the disposition in God to import happiness to His creature is called His goodness. Love is included in His goodness. If that is right, and I believe it is, mercy is a attribute of God, and it is His loving kindness, His goodness. His goodness includes loving kindness. And you see, here's something else. A lot of us have used Boyce at one time or another. Here's what Boyce says. Boyce stated that the goodness of God may be spoken of as kindness. You see, I'm using him for this because it agrees with what I'm talking about. But listen, I'm going to use him just a little bit further. He also stated a form of God's love, and here's what he said, corresponds to what we call mercy. And it consists not only in the desires to inflict punishment due to sin and the neglect or refusal to do so, but in the actual pardon of sinner. In other words, Boyce said that God's mercy actually pardons sinners. Now, he was a Calvinist. So you see that the Calvinist had to use mercy, and mercy, they said, simply by God's mercy, He saves whoever He wants to. So you see, that's how that Webster got the concept of forgiveness and mercy. Now, I want to go back. I want to summarize. God's mercy is eternal. There's scriptures. It's stated 41 times. Mercy endureth forever. His mercy is everlasting. His truth endureth through all generations. Mercy, God's loving kindness, His goodness and attribute is forever, from everlasting to everlasting. Now, God shows mercy toward saved people. I gave you the scripture. God shows mercy toward lost people. He loves saved people, shows kindness to them, and He loves lost people. He shows kindness to them. God shows mercy to those that love Him and keep His commandments. God shows mercy to the innocent. I like this. I want to read this one. And in fact, this is, as I was studying, I've been concerned all this time because I never heard anyone do exactly what I'm doing. But you see, when I got to this verse right here, and this was where that God shows mercy to the innocent. You remember Joseph down in Egypt. Potiphar's wife accused him of something he didn't do, and he was in prison. And here's what it says. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy. He wasn't guilty, but the Lord showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. So you see that word, and to be honest with you, it just bubbled over when I read that. So I'm pretty sure I'm on the right road where the Lord wanted me to be. Now then, I want to go back now to, you remember I said I was trying to understand about mercy and grace. If mercy is loving kindness, and that's what I believe it is, I don't believe it includes forgiveness, because I believe that that has crept into our beliefs as a result of the Calvinistic doctrine was used by Webster as he went through time. And then it kept going. In fact, it's still in my mind when I talk about mercy. I have trouble going back to mercy is just loving kindness. Now then, mercy and grace. You see, those people that believe that mercy includes forgiveness, like the Calvinist, they have a trouble of saying where mercy starts and grace starts. But if you understand that mercy is simply loving kindness, it is clear. It is so clear. Loving kindness from everlasting to everlasting, an attribute of God. That's mercy. Now then, grace. Grace has a beginning. Mercy is from everlasting to everlasting. One of the things that I got to, and I got to this, and I should have recognized it right off, is that if we say that mercy includes forgiveness, then we say God could simply forgive things. He could have simply forgiven Adam and Eve because they disobeyed Him. If mercy includes forgiveness, why was grace necessary? Now, I'm telling you, I've got a lot of questions, but I'm telling you the things that came to my mind. So then if you go to Young's and Strong's and loving kindness, I'm not going to use worse anymore, I'm just going to use loving kindness. Loving kindness from beginning, there's no beginning, from everlasting to everlasting, an attribute of God. Loving kindness is an attribute of God. We understand that. Grace had a beginning. Mercy did not have a beginning. Loving kindness did not have a beginning. Grace had a beginning in that, for God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in Him shall not perish but have everlasting life. I'll tell you what you could do, and I'll give you some other scriptures, but I'm just, they're in here. That scripture, for God so loved the world. All right, now let's back up. Because of God's loving kindness, because of mercy, because of God's loving kindness, He instituted grace where we could be saved. Now, I want to say one more thing about grace. Mercy, loving kindness, for God so loved the world, was the first cause or the cause of grace. God loved the world. And because of that loving kindness, He instituted grace, Jesus dying. So you see, now with this definition of loving kindness, it is really easy for me to understand where loving kindness, and you say my question was even right, begins and ends, where loving kindness is everywhere. But then grace was instituted when God saw, and that's not the right word, but it's the best I can do, when God saw that we needed to be saved. Now, I want to talk about one more thing, then we'll quit. It's really important, and we teach and we believe that only by the, without the shedding of blood, there is no remission. In other words, we teach without forgiveness by grace, there's no forgiveness of sins. And if that is true, then it is not possible that mercy would forgive sins. Mercy is simply God loving us. Grace was set up so that we could be saved. I want to read my summary, conclusion. And then I'll give you one more verse. God's mercy or loving kindness is from everlasting to everlasting. And there is neither pardon nor forgiveness in mercy. Because of His mercy or loving kindness, God provided a plan of salvation, which is by grace. Pardon or forgiveness is only possible by grace. The source of pardon or forgiveness, as part of today's use of words, seems to have come from the Calvinistic belief of Noah Webster as he prepared his dictionary in the early 1800s. One more verse. Surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.